fighting soldiers from the sky. Fearless men who jump and die. Men who mean just what they say. The brave men of the Green Beret. Silver wings upon their chest. These are men, America's best. 100 men will test today, but only 3 win the Green Beret. Trained to live off nature's land, trained in combat hand to hand. Men who fight by night and day, courage take from the Green Beret. Silver wings upon their chest. These are men, America's best. 100 men will test today, but only 3 win the Green Beret. Back at home, a young wife waits. Her Green Beret has met his fate. He has died for those oppressed, leaving her this last request. Put silver wings on my son's chest. Make him one of America's best. He'll be a man they'll test one day. Have him win the Green Beret.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is J.R. Moore coming to you live from deep in the mountains of the Missouri Ozarks. On Friday, the 20th day of October, year of our Lord, 2017, and welcome to the John Moore Show. Here's your prepper tip of the day. It's something I need to repeat frequently. I want to encourage all of you to get your training. There's lots of training you can get, but the two basic skill sets that I really urge people to get are emergency first aid training and your ham radio training, get your ham radio license. That's your prepper tip of the day. We had our meeting yesterday to plan our training for our local group during calendar year 2018, which includes a ham radio class that Tom Berryhill, I hope, will volunteer to be part of as our primary instructor, followed by the implementation of a new ham radio club in Viburnum, Missouri. That will be this coming spring of 2018. And with that said, we do have a patient waiting in the green room, my friend Tom Berryhill. Tom Berryhill is a gentleman who began his interaction with the ham radio community and got his ham radio license just over half a century ago. Tom has went on to become quite an expert, although he doesn't consider himself an expert. I do, in the area of ham radio and radio frequency communications. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, John. I don't know if I deserve all those kind words, but thank you very much.
Well, you do, sir. You were trained in the Motorola area of professional expertise, weren't you, sir?
Well, John, early on, I got interested in repeater systems. I first got on the air in 1967 with ham radio, and then by around 1970, the ham operators became very interested in repeater systems and local communications using VHF FM. Well, there wasn't any ham radio equipment available unless you built it yourself, and it would be quite complex to build something like that from scratch. So they were picking up surplus equipment, World War II equipment, used equipment that was previously from the taxi cab, police, fire department service, and they would take those surplus radios and convert them into the ham radio bands, and that's what we used early on. The first VHF equipment I had was called a Motorola coffin box because they look like a small coffin. There was a separate transmitter and a separate receiver, and it took up at least half of the trunk of the older cars. And you know, John, in the old days, the trunk of a car was huge, and those, those radios took up quite a bit of space. They had what was called a dynamotor power supply, which was a motor that ran off the 6 or 12-volt system in the car. And that, in turn, generated the high voltage that ran the tubes in those radios. That's what we use, and that's what I got interested in. And it, so it was in those days, it was Motorola, General Electric, and RCA. They were the big guns in the communications business. We built some early repeater systems. The first one I built was a about 1974, and it was a... used General Electric equipment, tube-type equipment. The receiver was solid-state, but the transmitter had tubes in it. And then another system followed that that was very similar, and we put that on top of a very tall building in Clayton, Missouri, which was the really a central. It was a county seat for St. Louis County, and also very tall buildings, as you know, John, in that area. And our antenna was on top of a 15-story building. We had tremendous coverage around the St. Louis area, and we had it interconnected with the telephone system. So we had HT radios, and they were basically like a handheld telephone. And there's only a couple of us on that unit, on that system. Just two. It was a private system. It was on UHF 450 megahertz band,
right?
And it worked quite well. That was General Electric. I also had some RCA equipment, and then in later years, the interest in it grew considerably, and then much of the equipment became available from the regular ham radio manufacturers, such as ICOM, Yaesu, Kenwood, and so on. So those are the big ones in the business, and they started producing that type of equipment, and it caught on. And to this day, that's what most of the new hams will start out with, is some of the VHF equipment made by one of those companies.
Well, I can imagine the trunk of a Crown Vic in 1970, half filled with this kind of equipment, and the mobile units were using vacuum tubes also.
Oh yeah, John. In the early days, in fact, the I don't know if you could even get the tubes for those things anymore. The transmitter I had was a Motorola 30D. D as in David. People could look this up and probably find pictures. I know online there's some photos showing old police radio systems, and they have the trunk of the like a 1951 Ford or something opened, and you can see the equipment in there and a big antenna on the back. It was some monstrous stuff. The transmitter was a 30D, and the receiver I had was a 16V, V as in Victor. And they were separate units that were interconnected with cables. And then I went on later from there. I had an 80D, which was all in one box with a transmitter receiver. They were both tube type again, but smaller tubes, the regular 7 and 9 pin tubes that you would find in television sets, you know, from the probably around the 60s. And then we went on to other equipment. Some of the Motorola equipment I used back in those days, some of the early radios. In one case, I had a Motorola Motrak. That thing was worth many times more than the car it was in. And, John, I'll tell you what, every time I was a teenager and had kind of a lead foot, and I was well known to the cops because they pulled me over. Occasionally, the cops would pull me over just because they wanted to see what I was up to. The local police department, these guys could not stand the fact that I had a radio that was very similar to theirs. In fact, mine was a little bit better. There was only two frequencies. It had a little toggle switch change between frequency one and frequency two. Mine had the four-channel switch on it, so I had four channels on that Motorola Motrak. And
right.
Boy, that just drove those cops crazy. They always accused me of listening in to them and all kinds of stuff. But that wasn't the case. I wasn't listening to them. But we did have several ham radio repeaters on in the St. Louis area, and I, I could switch between the various frequencies that were available. And then later we got into better equipment. Motorola MOCOM 70s was a budget-type unit that Motorola made, but it was a pretty good piece of equipment. And then the state-of-the-art back in the mid-70s was a Motorola MiCor. And then there were several versions of that that we used. And then, but I'll tell you, if people building repeater equipment to hams listening, if they want to build something from scratch, to this day, in my opinion, there is nothing better than the General Electric Master II. The GE Master II was one of the finest pieces of two-way radio equipment ever built. Some of those are still on the air to this day. I have five or six of them sitting out in the barn. They came from the St. Louis airport when they narrow-banded everything and shut everything down. There was a fellow in St. Louis that had to dispose of all that equipment, and he didn't want to throw it away, so he put it in his garage, and then he advertised it for sale. So I put all that stuff in the back of a pickup truck and bought all of it from him. And maybe someday I'll put some of it to use, but these are very, very nice systems. So anybody that's in the ham radio and wants to build a repeater system, they should give that type of equipment some consideration. There's there's some really nice stuff out there today, John, that's built by Kenwood, ICOM, Yaesu, that's digital modulation, the new digital modes, and as well as analog, and they're very nice radios. Very nice repeater systems. They're very expensive.
Right.
But I'm telling you, you just can't beat that Master II.
Right. We our repeater we have, our ham radio repeater in Viburnum, is a Motorola unit that I think previously had been in the back of a Missouri Highway Patrol cruiser that was reprogrammed by an expert to be usable as a ham repeater. I'll make sure you get a chance to see it, Tom, when the next time you're out for our next ham radio class this coming spring. And like I said earlier, we're going to be starting a new ham radio club in Viburnum, Missouri. We have, I think, half a dozen current hams in our area, and we're going to be commencing training for several people expressed interest yesterday in training and getting their license at our business meeting yesterday. And let's see, I got the date here for the ham radio. Let's see, that would be, okay, when is ham radio? Looks like May the 5th, Saturday, May 5th, if you can put that in your calendar. Saturday, May 5th.
Okay, well, I'd sure like to go, John. I'm not in your exact area, but if it's open to outsiders, I'd sure like to attend.
Well, that's the training class. That you're
sure, I'll definitely be there for that.
But
and John, is that the repeater where you have the classes? You can look out the window and see the tower down the street?
You can, yeah, that's okay. The same. Right, that's it. This coming Monday, we're going to do a test of our FM transmitter in Viburnum, Missouri, and I'll put a note out to all our people to be listening. We try to do this twice a year. Get everything put together. We keep everything in a Faraday box, so it's safe from EMP. It takes about 10 minutes to get the box open, get the equipment all connected and ready to go. I'll be training one or two of our people to make sure we got the max amount of people trained to use this equipment. And we're broadcasting on a commercial FM frequency, which under FCC rules you're allowed to do under emergency circumstances, and we use a frequency that's open in our area, which, considering how remote it is, it's most of that spectrum is open. So we'll set it up, broadcast for a few minutes, have people listening to see, make sure they hear the signal okay, and we'll shut everything down after a few minutes and pack it away for another half a year. The reason I'm telling you all this stuff, ladies and gentlemen, is to stimulate some thought on your part. What we're doing in my community can be done in any community. These FM transmitters are sold on eBay and on Amazon. You can get pretty much everything you need for about $300, can't you, Tom?
That seems to be about the price. I don't. In some cases, even less than that. Some of those units, 30 watts output, that will easily cover an entire community, a small community, not a major metropolitan area. You need a lot more power for that. But in the smaller communities, 30 watts will do it easily. And that system, 300, about right, John. But I've seen those things for $100.
Right.
The prices are all over the place. You just have to do some shopping.
We're setting up our second FM transmitter here in my township, Osage Township, probably in the next week or two. There's three or four of us working on that. And initially it's going to be a FM transmitter, a CB, a two-way transceiver. And I'll be working with the Crawford County Emergency Services people to make arrangements to have a frequency to talk to what they call CENTCOM if and when the need ever arises. And we're going to be expanding that to the rest of Crawford County also, that each township hopefully would have their own communications with their own people and could communicate with CENTCOM in the event that the telephones don't work anymore. And the telephones, under certain circumstances, will go down, won't they, Tom?
Well, they certainly will, and that happens to me. You know, John, we had copper wire back to the central office in town about a four-mile trip for my telephone line, and they did away with that. I'm thinking about 10 years ago, approximately, they trenched in new fiber optic lines. So right across the road from me is fiber optic lines from the central office, and then they have, I guess you could call them repeater stations every mile or so to boost the signal, and then to split that out to the copper wires that go to the individual homes and farms and commercial buildings and so on. But I'll tell you what, there's backup batteries in those units, and I went across the road when they were installing that thing to take a look at it, and they showed me the workings of the inside of that cabinet. The fiber optic is terminated in there. They tap into that, and they can split out the individual phone signals to the copper lines. And, John, there's a backup battery in there, and those guys told me that thing will only last about 2 hours when the power is out.
Right.
Now, that really surprised me. The power has been out longer than that. The last major power outage we had around here was about 15, 16 hours, something like that. And the phone system worked the whole time. So it was, maybe they've increased the batteries, I don't know. But it doesn't last that long. Years ago in this area, when they still had the copper lines running, they still had to have backup power. They transmitted some of the power to the remote repeater boxes by cables that were trenched right alongside the copper lines that carried the phone signals. But that wasn't enough, and they would go around, when there was major power outages, they would actually go out to the remote cabinets and set up a generator. And then the phone company had problems with people stealing the generators. So they would chain them to a pole or a tree, and that helped a lot. But they actually had to run these generators, and they had a guy going around with cans of gas filling up these generators on a regular basis just to keep those cabinets running. It was a problem. I think this fiber optic thing works a lot better, but there's still outages, and every once in a while I can't even get a dial tone. They did tell me it's a VoIP system, so it's voice over internet from once it gets into that cabinet, goes into the fiber optic. So it's a totally new type of system. It works pretty good most of the time. But there are.
I'm surprised the utility company would use a gas power generator instead of propane. Now here in our area, we have a tower, a fairly new tower, put up for emergency services, and they have a propane generator and a propane tank. And a copper thief stole the copper line between the propane tank and the generator. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, what they're powering here is just these small cabinets. There's no tower or anything. There's a small utility pole with an electric meter on it, and they have an electric drop to that, and that powers the little cabinet. The cabinet's about the size of a very small refrigerator, and in that are the, it's actually, what's called T1. They were data systems, and then they could voice circuits on each. I think each T1 channel would handle 24 voice circuits, and that's how they were doing it.
Hold that thought, Tom. We got a break. Call number is 800-313-9443. We'll be right back.
For the past 14 years, it's been my privilege to host the National Intel Report on RBN, to offer a platform to interview exceptional guests, to provoke critical thought, and examine evidence, whether real, fake, or somewhere in between, and allow our audience to call in and participate with your input and questions, in order to help us all reach an educated decision.
Ladies and gentlemen, J.R. Moore here. As most of you know, my regular listeners, I offer energy cleaners for sale at my website. If you don't have a clue what I'm talking about, go to my website, thelibertyman.com, educate yourself about these marvelous healing devices. We focus on pain mitigation and getting a great night's sleep. Arthritis pain, joint pain, back pain, doesn't matter. Keep in mind, I offer for me to you personally a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's what I do. Energy cleaners, $285, shipping included, to American zip codes. You can educate yourself all about the energy cleaner right there at my website, the patent application, the wonderful testimonials. Be sure and check out the factory-made fitted mattress pads to go with the energy cleaner. Now, I offer for me to you personally a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's what I do. I have a toll-free order line, or you can order it right at my website at thelibertyman.com. The toll-free order line is 800-592-9543. I say again, 800-592-9543. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, J.R. Moore here. It's taken 3 years before I could offer the Intershelter domes for sale. During those 3 years, several different governments and militaries were taking all their production. The Intershelter dome homes may be just what you've been looking for to provide affordable, energy-efficient, permanent, and attractive housing. These dome homes are prefabricated units that can be assembled in a few hours by two men with a ladder and simple hand tools. Check out the photos of these dome homes built in the Arctic, on tropical beaches, in suburban areas, and in forests. All the details, many photographs, and the pricing of the dome homes are listed on the left-hand side of my homepage at thelibertyman.com. I think you'll find these homes are not only attractive, but they're energy efficient and a bonus. You can disassemble them and reassemble them as many times as you feel you need the need to. Pretty great, huh? Something that's very, very unique. Check them out at my website at thelibertyman.com. J.R. Moore here on Friday the 20th of October, visiting with Tom Berryhill. We're talking about emergency communications. Tom, I want to go through our training schedule for 2018. We're in the third year of our local group, having monthly training starting our third year in a couple months of 2018. And the reason I'm doing this is we got people all over the United States. There's more than 3,000 counties in the United States. I believe it's around 3,300 counties in the United States. In my opinion, Tom, every county should have their own emergency preparedness. What do you think, sir?
Well, I agree 100%, John. You know, a friend of mine is on the 911 board here in our county, and he took me on a private tour of their dispatch center. They just built it. It's brand new. It's a very nice setup. There's room for expansion, and they have some real nice equipment there. And the lady that runs it, when she found out I was a ham radio operator, she says, oh, we have some ham radio equipment here. And they went in the back storage room and brought out this box. And they had the brand-new equipment sitting in a box, but nobody knew what to do with it.
Right.
So I offered to help them get that set up. And I think this came in with federal grants, federal government grants, and they have sent a lot of this equipment to the various counties or their dispatch centers, but they need help getting this set up. And I think it's a good idea for them to have that. So I would encourage ham operators to maybe check with their county emergency management agencies and see if they do need any help getting that equipment installed.
Well, that's a simulate some thought on my part, just telling me that, Tom, because I'm in the dispatch office for the local emergency services at least once a month, sometimes twice a month, and it never even occurred to me to talk to them about that topic, but I will do so in the next week or so, and I'll be talking to some other officials as well. But here's our training schedule for 2018. In January, CPR. February, first responder training. March will be gardening preparation and permaculture. April will be a herb and wild edible walk. Well, instructor will teach us how to identify, collect, and prepare herbs and wild edibles. May, ham radio, as we discussed earlier. June will be what's called a pioneer fun day, where there'll be six or eight exhibits set up of various pioneering skills, kind of like an old-fashioned the way that there's different ways this has been set up in the past in different locations, but it'll be a fun day for preparing food, campsites, shelter, and so forth. July will be practical first aid. August, food preservation. September will be a firefighting for the homeowner. October will be a carbine class. In November, ammunition reloading. And December will be making primitive weapons, bows, crossbows, axes, knives, tomahawks, all those things. And that's our training schedule for 2018. Pretty complete, don't you think, Tom?
It is, and I'm interested in all of it. John, you didn't mention a class that you had in the past that always interested me, and I was unable to attend, but I believe you had a registered nurse that taught how to suture wounds. That would be very interesting.
Suturing, yeah. The hands-on first aid that will include suturing. Yeah. You were there you weren't there, were you?
No, I've never attended one, but I'd like to. I've had a few injuries myself that I had to sew up, and the last time I just used super glue, it worked pretty good. But I'd sure like to know about that suturing.
Well, it takes the mystery out of it, because before I attended the suturing class, the whole thing was kind of mysterious to me. But doing a hands-on class for suturing was a great opportunity to take the mystery out of that. It's a very simple procedure, actually, and I'm glad I took that class. And I'll talk to the instructor for the hands-on first aid to make sure that suturing is part of it. But like I mentioned earlier, Tom, there's more than 3,300 counties in the United States. Every county should have their own emergency preparedness, and it should be broken down even further to the township, I believe, don't you, Tom?
I think so, and this, as far as ham radio goes, that is an easy thing to do if you take a township and set up a frequency that the ham operators know to tune into when there's anytime there's an emergency. That'd be a very wise system to set up, especially if they have a base station at the dispatch center that the regular 911 dispatchers can access. Of course, they'd have to be licensed ham operators, but it's not too hard to do. I think the test is only 25 or 30 questions. They're pretty basic. The answers are published, and if I hate to say it, John, but if you're good at memorization, you can pass that test. You don't have to know
Absolutely.
Anything about it.
Absolutely. Well, that's true. It is simple. The ham radio test, They pull the questions from a pool, and we'll talk about that more after the break. Stay tuned.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Ladies and gentlemen, J.R. Moore here. We're continuing our Energy Cleaner promotion, which began August of 2016. In this promotion, you get to buy an Energy Cleaner, $70 off retail, and a mattress pad, 10% off retail. $200 of the purchase price of the Energy Cleaner goes to Republic Broadcasting. This is a great way to help get Energy Cleaners out to people who need them and have some financial issues to deal with. And, of course, a great way to support Republic Broadcasting. Here's what you do. Send in a postcard. My address is John Moore, P.O. Box 201, Davidsville, Missouri. We pick a postcard every 2 weeks. If your postcard is drawn, you get the chance to buy the Energy Cleaner $70 off retail and 10% off the mattress pads. Put your name and your address, your telephone number and your email address on the postcard, and we wish you the best of luck. Thank you.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Extendivite is more than just a heart tonic. Most basic diseases are caused by yeast in the gut and metals in the liver, and we all have a bit of both. The garlic in Extendivite has a yeast-killing effect in the gut while also helping the sulfur enzyme in the liver get rid of the metals. Extendivite just may improve your overall health. Products like Extendivite are the only way we are going to get our society healthy. And if you're waiting for the government...
We are back, ladies and gentlemen. We're back. J.R. Moore here on Friday, the 20th of October. My website is thelibertyman.com. That's thelibertyman.com. If you live anywhere near the East Coast of the United States, the Gulf Coast, Caribbean, you need to read the banner. Click on the banner at the top of my website. It says Isla Palma, about to fall into the sea. An update there from my friend Professor McKinney. Since he wrote his update, there's been even more earthquakes in the Canary Islands, which in the past, we're talking a long time ago, many thousands of years, has caused a tidal wave that took out the east coast of the United States. So you really need to read that seriously. Also, my website, of course, are energy cleaners for sale. Marvelous healing devices, that's what they are. We focus on arthritis pain, joint pain, back pain. Typically, the energy cleaner will help all those things. If it doesn't, small percentage chance. If it doesn't, I offer a 30-day money-back guarantee. Go to my website, read up on the energy cleaner, read the testimonials there from people that I know and trust, like Steve Whitman. Read the patent application information. Then make your decision. Go ahead and get your energy cleaner. It's only $285, shipping included, American zip codes. Pick yourself out a mattress pad to go with it. It's a great combination. I'm shipping out an energy cleaner and a king-size pad today, as a matter of fact. This is my home business. When you place your order, I'm the guy that packs them up. I put them on the counter at the little country post office in Cherryville, Missouri, at the country store there. And every time I set one on the counter, I feel like here's another one for the good guys. Here's somebody else that's going to get their life back and have the health and energy they need to do the things that they want to do. You can place your order right there at my website at thelibertyman.com using PayPal, MasterCard, Visa. Checks can be sent to my address at thelibertyman.com. And my toll-free order line, here it is, 24 hours a day. Don't try to call me at this. Order is only 800-592-9543. I say again, 800-592-9543. Visiting with Tom Berryhill, we're talking about emergency communications and related matters. And Tom, we got a regular caller here we haven't heard from for a while, Glenn in Philadelphia. Good morning, Glenn.
Good morning, John. Good morning, Tom. Hi. Yep, just real busy to work with work, but I've been listening. In the previous work incarnation, I had done insulation and repair work for Bell of PA. And around here, we have Verizon now, and now, Bell PA became Verizon. We have Verizon now vending communications and data services, and we have Comcast as the big cable provider, and they now provide landline phone service, and they're doing cell phone. So it's this whole big Hegelian dialectic, Coke versus Pepsi, Ford versus Chevy thing going on between the two of them, and they all have their commercials. Our service is better, faster, cheaper. No, our service is better, faster, cheaper all the time. And until a few months ago, I still had a twisted copper pair phone line, on copper all the way back to the frame at the CO. And I always kept this. I didn't use the line much, but I always valued that as sort of an insurance policy. Well, when I moved in, that line was just over $20 a month. It's been creeping up over 30. It's just heading towards 40. And I can't see paying, $400, $500 a month for an insurance policy phone line, so I did give it up. But our lines are up on poles, so the, like you said, they got rid of the copper wire. Well, we still have that in place around here, and it's very, very dependable. And they do the gas generator thing around here as well on the poles, both Comcast and Verizon. But with Verizon, you also have. It's funny, Verizon runs the fiber all the way into the house to this little transmitter box, and then it goes on the copper at the interface for the house. And that's when it goes out the copper. But those things have batteries in them that cost you $40 a crack. If you get them from them, you can get them for about $15-16 over the Internet. But those things, so you have a battery at the units you were talking about. You have a battery in the house. There's something to be said for the simplicity of the old copper, twisted copper pair phone line with a 48-volt DC dial tone and a 96-volt AC ringtone, and it's just was dependable as all get out. And they had big honking batteries at the CO that last forever. So when I started with them, they still had mechanical relays in a lot of the frames. You'd walk into the CO and you click, 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 click. I miss the good old days.
Well, all right. I agree, Glenn. And, around here, the copper lines are still there, but they've all but abandoned them. The only copper around here is from the house underground across the road to the cabinet. And then from there, it's actually a VoIP circuit over fiber optic back to the central
office.
Okay,
which company is that? Which company is that?
Fidelity. Fidelity Telephone,
okay.
They're in Sullivan,
okay.
Missouri. John, are you on their service?
Yes. No. Steelville Telephone provides my service. They do a great job,
so.
By the way.
They're still using tin cans and strings, aren't they, down there in Steelville?
Oh, no. We got to pass those about 2 or 3 weeks ago. No.
Oh, okay, good. It's Fidelity Telephone, and they have a pretty darn good system. I was in their central office. I knew some of the guys that worked there, and they took me in the back and showed me where they did have all the frames, and they had the rack cabinets and everything with all they even had some Strogers that were still working in there, and they ripped all that out. You can see the outlines on the floor where the cabinets used to be. Now in one corner of that big room are a couple of computers. They're like tall tower PC-type computers. And that runs the entire exchange for the whole area.
Right. Well, that's good. And they apparently translate to copper out at the BD box, the sack or whatever they call it. But the funny thing around here is they advertise, fiber versus copper. Well, the Comcast cable company runs, a coaxial copper wire into your house to your router, in your cable boxes. So they run copper, but back at the box out on the pole, they're on fiber too. So basically, everybody's on fiber. It's just that Verizon runs the fiber in your house, and the other outfit might have another 50, 100 yards of copper. That's the only difference between them. But boy, do they play off, they play games of that in the advertising and marketing,
Well, there's a lot, you mentioned batteries. There's a lot of battery power involved in the telephone systems, and especially when they're isolated between cabinets with only fiber optic, unless they run some power lines with that, they have to rely on utility power to run those systems along with battery backup. In a long power outage, those things will fail to operate. So the
that's why I paid for the copper line, but I can't really rationalize spending, $400 or more per month, or per year rather, for something that's functioning basically as a communications insurance policy. I did finally give it up.
Well, the old system was very reliable because the central office, all of that equipment ran on battery banks, huge battery banks, and they charged those off the utility power and also generator backups, usually diesel or natural gas or propane-powered generators.
Oh, yeah.
And they would keep those things fueled up. And the whole system ran on a 48-volt battery. Now, that's why anytime there was a power outage, you could pick up a regular landline phone, and it always worked.
Yeah, I did finally give it up. I'm stuck with cell phone and my handy talkies.
And of course, back to battery. Now, the cellular system is pretty reliable, and all of the towers do have battery backup. The smaller ones may even have some solar power, but typically they'll have a generator system, and in almost every case, they're either natural gas or propane powered. Out here in the rural areas, there's usually a propane tank. I'll see a 500 gallon propane tank sitting next to usually an Onan or a Cat or Generac type system, and that runs the whole building, including the tower lights. Those towers, if they're, I believe it's 197 feet or taller, they have to have the blinking red lights. So they have some pretty tall towers out here in the sticks, so they're typically lighted, and they have to make sure that those lights stay on. So that takes a lot of power, too.
Gotcha. All right, well, thank you, Tom. Thank you, John. Take care.
Okay, thank you.
Have a good weekend. Bye-bye.
There was
the weak link there, John? The weak link in every case. Batteries.
It is. I was working with the St. Louis City Police Communications a few years back, and we came to the topic of backup communications. It shocked me, but it makes perfect sense. On the street corners all over St. Louis, Missouri, you'll see these cast iron pedestals that stand about 7.5-8 feet tall, with a box on top. That were installed more than a century ago for police communications, before there was anything such as radios even thought of, or at least been used, I should say. I think Marconi was doing his first radios back then, but it turns out those cast iron pedestals are still the backup communication for the police and fire department in case everything else breaks down.
Were those the telephone unit that the cops could pull up to and call back?
Yeah. Exactly.
I didn't know those were still in use. That's amazing.
Well,
but, you got to have it, I suppose.
They're in use. Another interesting little historical thing. One of Steve McQueen's early movies, 1959, titled The Great St. Louis Bank Robbery, which
was Southwest based on Bank, wasn't it?
It was based on something that did happen, the Southwest Bank robbery, Southwest Bank. There's a scene in there where they show the communications department for the St. Louis City Police Department. And, of course, the movie was filmed only, I think, about six or seven years after the actual bank robbery. So that equipment was still in use, the same equipment. And they set up the movie people set up inside the communications department there at St. Louis City Police Department, and they... They filmed the women operators operating all that equipment, which, of course, was state-of-the-art at the time, but now it's all antiques and very primitive by today's standards. But it was a fascinating scene for anybody that's into communications.
Oh, yeah, I've seen some of that, John. It is rather interesting if you're familiar with that type of equipment. You know, all the here in Missouri anyway, and I'm sure other states are similar, there are HF backup systems. So they are licensed to operate around 1 kilowatt of power with single sideband equipment. Some of them have data interfaces as well, so they can send email type messages and so on. And they operate in a shortwave spectrum from, some of them are licensed around 2 megahertz up to, I believe it's somewhere around 9 or 10 megahertz, or maybe it's only 8, I don't remember, but they typically will operate most of the time. And of course, you have to change this depending on whether it's day or night, but it's they operate between 2 and 8 or 10 megahertz. And this allows the state agencies and the county governments and local governments to communicate back to the state capital and between themselves for emergency communications if all else fails. And, you know, you can look at the FCC database and you can see what systems are licensed. You'll find that in almost every case, every county in the state has one of these HF systems now. I'll drive past a courthouse or, you know, our county seat, and I can look at the antennas and see kind of what they have. And most of the time, I'll spot that HF antenna. In some cases, it's a dipole, right. And they have an automatic antenna tuner on that unit. And I actually saw one of them one time. It was a Motorola MyCom, which is a very nice piece of equipment. It's about 125 watts. Although they were authorized up to 1 kilowatt peak power, so they could run a lot of power, although they really wouldn't need it for statewide coverage, and 125 watts would be more than adequate for that type of service. But these counties have all put these in now. I doubt if there's one that doesn't have it. I'm sure there were state and federal grants to put this all in, and so it's a backup system if all else fails. When it hits the fan, that's possibly right, what they'll be used.
Right. A friend of mine, I won't mention his name, but you know who he is, back in the 1970s when he was in Thailand, he got an assignment. He's working for NATO to climb up on the wall of the Russian embassy to look at their antennas so he could determine what their capabilities were.
It's real simple. John. You can look at the antennas and... Depending on the size of the elements, you can figure this out. And the formula, when you want to, for the ham operators out there, if you want to make a quarter wave antenna, it's quarter wave and half wave antennas are typically used on the HF spectrum, and it's just 234 divided by the frequency in megahertz gives you the length in feet. And then if it's a half, that's for a quarter wave, and if it's a half wave antenna, like a dipole, a half wave dipole, which is a very simple to make and very easy to set up antenna, that would be 468 divided by the frequency in megahertz. So it's real simple. The calculations are simple, and they're rapidly deployed, those types of antennas.
Right. I know sometimes visitors to my home, they look up and see my Yagi antenna up there, and they're impressed with it because it is a very professional-looking piece of equipment. Getting back to
I didn't know you had one of those. What frequency is that for?
For the cell phone frequency, so I can get cell phone service here.
Okay, yeah. So that's a pretty small Yagi antenna,
It is. And when we start our ham radio club in Viburnum, Missouri, it's going to be a combination of fun and socialization plus learning and training. And that's what keeps people coming back is the social and fun part of it, isn't it, Tom?
It really is, and you have an interesting group there, John. You really do. I've got to meet some of those people and talk with them after we've had our meetings, and it's always been enjoyable. Really met some nice and interesting people.
Right, and typically when these groups get together, there's shared values, shared beliefs, and we share knowledge between us. And I learn things that are very helpful to me when I go to these, because everybody's got their own areas of expertise, and I always bring in something to write with, because I'll hear about websites, I'll hear about equipment, I'll find out about things that I would never ever find out about otherwise, and that brings a lot of value to the table, doesn't it, Tom?
Well, it really does. And John, I've always noticed that no matter what, everywhere you go, anytime you're sitting there, when we're in a restaurant or anywhere, you always have paper and pencil close.
I do. I do. Always. Always.
Always taking notes. Yes.
Here's our break. Call number is 800-313-9443. We'll be right back.
Hi, folks. CBD is the home run hitter for health right now. Why, you ask? Because of what it does for the body. Unfortunately, I can't tell you all about the benefit. You know, there's reasons. Do your due diligence and log on to AncientLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com. Ancient Life Oil uses organic ingredients and is blended in coconut oil for some of the best benefits. Legal in 50 states and non-psychoactive. Log on to AncientLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com.
Do you worry a lot? Whether you're a college student, busy professional, parent, or grandparent, ongoing stress and elevated levels of the stress hormone cortisol can rob your memory, your health, and your future. Now you can combat the effects of stress and anxiety while improving your memory and recall at the same time with the dietary supplement Calm and Clever. Studies show that the ingredients in Calm and Clever reduce cortisol by as much as 30% in 1 to 2 weeks. Call 1-800-758-8746 or calmandclever.com.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Communications and related matters. Tom, ham radio, the ham radio hobby, I should say, can and should be a family hobby. We routinely have 8 and 10 year old boys and girls getting a ham radio license, and of course, older folks as well. And it's not terribly, as hobbies go, compared to many things like fishing or hunting or photography. It's a pretty inexpensive hobby, isn't it?
Well, it really is, John. I'm glad you mentioned the young people. Yeah, I noticed at some of your meetings there would be several younger people, you know, teenagers and even younger than that, that are showing some interest, and that really is great because those young kids, if they get interested in this at their age, they can really develop a knowledge base that is second to none. And some of this you cannot learn even at the finest university. You just can't do it. You can't do it in several years at in a university setting. I mean, it's a lifelong education, and we have to learn every day. I mean, I learn something new every day, and I know you do too, John. But if these parents would bring their younger children to these meetings and learn about ham radio, if they have any interest at all in electronics, they can apply this in so many different areas, whether it be communications itself or industrial electronics or even becoming an electrical contractor, anything like this. You can learn all about it, and the ham radio is a good training ground. And then not only that, John, but when they get on the radio, you never know who you're talking to next. I can't tell you the number of times in my business career that I was trying to do business with a particular company, and once I found out the engineer was a ham radio operator, and they found out I was as well, it's almost like a fraternity. There was an instant connection, and all barriers were dropped, and you were in. I mean, you were instantly connected, and you could easily do business with that company. It just removes a lot of barriers. So any young people could really pick up on this quickly and learn as they go. It doesn't take much effort to get started, to get your license, and it's inexpensive. You can buy kits on eBay to build little transceivers that you can talk all over the country. Now, these are Morse code, but there's other equipment as well, but as low as $5, shipping included.
Right.
You can get a little... John, I passed around that little circuit board kit at the last meeting. I'm sure you saw that.
I remember that.
That thing was actually less than $5.
Right. So, and children like to do things where they're equal to adults. And so an 8-year-old boy or girl is actually involved in adult activity, doing adult things, giving them a sense of value and worth that's based on reality, not some made-up thing they do in these public schools. Right, Tom?
That's right, John. And when you get on the ham radio, you'll meet older people with a lot of experience that will help you along. I got to tell a quick story that's kind of funny. When I first got on in 1967, I was 13 years old, and I met a man that was a landline telegrapher for the railroad, and he said if I learned American Morse, he'd buy me this really nice telegraph key, and I learned it, and he bought me the key. It was fun.
Amazing. That was neat story. Tom, thank you. Have you back next Thursday. We'll talk about energy clinics. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you, John.
Okay. Top of the hour break. We'll be back with Dr. Myers. Stay tuned.
Do you or a loved one suffer migraine headaches? Listen to what scientist Kurt Hendricks has to say.
35 million people in the United States suffer with debilitating migraines. If you or a loved one are one of them, you need to know about MigRelief. Hi, I'm Kurt Hendricks, the scientist that formulated and patented the MigRelief migraine formula. MigRelief is a non-prescription dietary supplement recommended by neurologists, pharmacists, and pediatricians to address nutritional deficiencies in both adults and children over 2 with migraines. Try MigRelief for 3 months and see the powerful difference it can make in your life, or get your money back, no questions asked. Go to MIG911.com or call 800-MIG-7354. You can change your life today.
So if you suffer from migraines, don't wait. Call 800-MIG-7354. That's 800-MIG-7354 or visit MIG911.com.
Listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.